His skin is white just like a ghost. Thick Irish roots and his blonde hair. And he sounds like a Chicago super fan. A music nerd with a collection of CDs from here to there. Yes, Andy Dare is in Chicago, interviewing and barbecuing. It's the Andy Dare Show. It's the Andy Dare Show.
Welcome to the Andy Dare Show. I'm your host, Andy. And yeah, we're at 140 episodes this week. We got a great special guest. His name is Norman Blake. He's been with the band Teenage Fan Club since 1989. They are an awesome group with a long list of classic albums under their belt. And yeah, they're working on a brand new one coming this fall on Merge Records. What can you say about the Teenage Fan Club? You know, Kurt Cobain was a big fan. Liam Gallagher was a big fan. Lots of big fans, and I am one of them. And to be honest, I've only seen them live one time, which was in 1997. They were opening for Radiohead. It was right when Radiohead's OK Computer album came out. Saw them in a little place called the Riviera in Chicago. And yeah, it was a great night. You could tell that we were on to something that was going to be huge with that Radiohead album, which it did become huge. And yeah, I don't think I've even seen Radiohead after that point either. But it was a great point in the 90s where it was like these bands were our little secrets. It was before social media, so if you wanted to spread the word about the band, you really had to spread the actual word and tell a friend. And, yeah, so it was a cool time, but, you know, they have awesome albums. Their second album, Bandwagon-esque, won the Album of the Year 1991 for Spin Magazine, which, if you're any sort of music fan, you know that 1991 is literally stacked to the gills with classic albums. Your Neverminds, your Loveless, 10, there's a million, Dangerous by Michael Jackson. There's a ton of great albums. So for them to be called the number one album was huge. And yeah, they're from Glasgow, Scotland, and a real nice guy, this Norman. So had a blast chatting with him. We had a lot of good stuff to talk about. He was friendly, he was warm and kind, and I want to thank Norman for taking the time out of his day to talk with little old me out here in Chicago. But yeah, it's a great chat. Want to thank everybody who stayed on board for 140 episodes all the way back to January 2011. And yeah, we're building quite a little fan base. So I thought we would do a new thing where I would take voicemails. And if you want to leave a voicemail, questions, comments, concerns, whatever you like, something weird, something funny, was there a band I should interview, is there an album I should listen to, give me a call at 630-341-3022 and leave a voicemail. Here's some of the latest voicemails.
Andy, how you doing? Just checking out your show and enjoying it, and I wanted to get on the Honeycomb mailing list. My name is Marty, and I'm looking forward to getting on that list. I think it's awesome that you're actually like some old school and that you can actually feel your hands together. I've been seeing a fanzine or something like that, literature in the mail, and that's 2 decades. So great job on the show. I'm a fan, and all the best. Thanks.
I have a question and a concern. My wife wants to know why there are no Russian guests on your show. You need more Russian guests. It's too risky.
Hey, Andy. Great. What you like to refer to as Gladys? Why? I don't know. But, give me a call if I don't answer, because I'm busy at my part-time. All right, bye.
Hey, Andy, it's Kevin Matthews. I'm in my studio. I'm on my cell phone. Why don't you text me if you want to say hi, and I'm going to be recording for Friday. Thanks, bud.
And there you have it. Just want to thank everybody who's left a voicemail. And yes, if you want to be part of the Honeycomb fanzine mailing list, the easiest way is to call 630-341-3022. Leave a voicemail with your mailing address and name. And yeah, you'll get on the list. It is my new little project since January of this year. We've been doing the Honeycomb fanzine. It's completely free. And yeah, it just features articles from me, Tyler Kale, Jay Porks, and Dan Korhonen, the four guys working at Dare Network as we speak. And yeah, just a little throwback to the 80s and early 90s when, you know, you'd put a thing together, you'd copy it on a Xerox, and then you'd send it out to all your friends around the country. So it's just an interesting thing that we've been trying. And want to thank everybody who's been on the mailing list. We got something like 32 mailing list people now. So want to thank the cool people that left a voicemail. And it's always good to hear from Kevin Matthews. Hopefully I'll be on that show soon. Speaking of Kevin, last week I was a guest once again on Bob and Ron's Record Club, which is also a part of Dahl Network. Not Dare Network, Dahl Network, a.k.a. Steve Dahl's Podcast Network. So Bob and Ron, they do a great show. I'm a music freak. They're music freaks. I'm kind of funny. They're really funny. So I would definitely say go check out their show. If you like my show, you're going to love their show. It's a weekly thing at Dahl.com, D-A-H-L.com. And yeah, my episode from last Wednesday, we discuss my Honeycomb fanzine. We discuss some other cool things. And it's always a good time talking to those guys. And they're part of the Dahl Network, just like Kevin Matthews is. I really think it's definitely worth the money. It's an awesome subscription-based podcast network. So do check out Steve Dahl and his podcast network. And while you're at it, check out my network, Jay Pork's Experience, every Tuesday, coming to you straight out of Staten Island, New York City. And every Thursday, the Tyler Kale Show from Hollywood, California. And we got a brand new podcast called Spin Class. That is me and Tyler Kale doing a weekly show where we critique a hip-hop classic album. And that's executively produced by superfan Giovanni Giorgio. Real nice guy I've met through the whole Corolla, Adam Carolla universe. So do check out Spin Class. I want to keep my spiel short this week. I think the interview speaks for itself. TeenageFanClub.com for more info on the guys from Glasgow. Norman Blake's a super nice guy for doing this interview. Follow him on Twitter at Norman Blake. And yeah, that about does it. Want to thank everybody for keeping this thing going for 140 episodes. We're just going to keep going. And thank you so much for listening. And without further ado, my episode 140. I'll Make It Clear with special guest Norman Blake. Everybody, thank you so much for checking out the Andy Dare Show. This is episode 140, and it's an honor to be joined via phone by Norman Blake. How you doing, sir?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, nice to be speaking with you.
Oh, definitely. I've been a fan for over 20 years now. I've been doing this show for about five, and yeah, the beauty of Twitter, you just ask a question, and sometimes it comes back with a positive answer. So thanks for doing it.
Oh, no, my pleasure.
And, yeah, speaking of Twitter, I looked on there and I saw that you guys are in the midst of a new album, recording a new album, and how's the progress going on that?
Yeah, it's going well. It's almost done. I was back in Glasgow just a few weeks back putting some finishing pitches and some vocals and some guitar parts down. And so really we just have, I guess, about another couple of weeks of mixing, which the guys are doing back in Glasgow. I'm back, people may not know, but I live in Canada. So I've come home and the other fellas are putting the finishes to the album. So we're hopeful that we can have a September release for the record.
September release, awesome. And
yeah.
Are you guys just producing it by yourself?
Yeah, we did, yeah. We recorded the bulk of it at a studio in the south of France, which was a lot of fun, as you can imagine. Some great wine, some great cheese and food. and then we put the final parts down at Raymond from the band's home. He has a studio, a small studio set up there. We're kind of overseeing the whole thing ourselves.
That's awesome. How about an experience from the recording sessions that might shape the sound, or what is a previous Teenage Fan Club album that this might bring back memories of, or is it a completely new
sure.
style?
Well, do you know, I think we've always felt that the environment that you record in will definitely influence, you know, what you put down. We made an album in Chicago a few years back, a man-made album, and the bulk of that was done in the midst of a Chicago winter, very harsh winter. And so, I mean, I think that, and maybe lyrically, we sort of, a lot of the lyrics are sort of referencing spring and summer.
Nice.
You know, it was like, you know, as a sort of juxtaposition to the environment that we were recording in. But no, I think also because of the way that we write, there are three people writing songs. It's difficult to first, you know, we really conceptualize when we make them. For us, it really is just a collection of songs. But the atmosphere or the mood of it will be influenced by the environment. But I think, I mean, if, you know, all of our records have really just been song-based. There's no kind of general concept behind the whole thing. So I think what it is another album like that. But, you know, eclectic in the sense that there are some sort of acoustic, sort of folkier things on there. Some songs that are more orchestrated, and even some things that are maybe sort of more kind of straight sort of punk rock songs.
Oh, nice.
So there's a good variation in styles there.
That's awesome. And yeah, I did see that when you were in Chicago, you got to work at Soma with John McIntyre from Tortoise and a whole bunch of stuff. Did you guys enjoy your time in Chicago, or as you said, it was so frigid and cold, maybe that meant that you're going to be recording in Scotland for the rest of the albums?
Well, no, that was, we had a great time. John's a great guy. We had a good time with him. And Chicago's a fantastic city, of course. In fact, I see that as a kind of rehearsal for me moving to Canada, which is pretty frigid as well.
Right,
I've gotten used to that. We've had a couple of pretty harsh winters. I live about 1 hour west of Toronto, so in fact, not a million miles away from Chicago. And of course, when you're in the studio, you're spending most of the time indoors. In terms of going to the club, well, the room is just around the corner from John's studio, so we didn't have to walk very far. We only had to spend 1 or 2 minutes in the cold weather before we could have a nice pint after the session. And actually, it became a kind of a running joke throughout the session that John has. I think we dined in a different restaurant every single night. John has a couple of books full of menus, and so it was quite a good culinary experience as well as a good recording experience.
All right, and we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of a big album for me, for you guys. Grand Prix came out in May of 95, and that was a pretty awesome album, and it was pretty much heralded across the board, lots of good critical acclaim, and it sold pretty well. Was there a lot of pressure to make something a little bit more approachable after the 13 release?
I'm not really sure. I think for us, we felt that with the 13 record, we hadn't really achieved what we had wanted to achieve. In that we had when we started making that record, we had like 35 or 40 songs, and probably 35 or 40 unfinished songs, and we spent a long time making it, and the process of making that record was not a lot of fun for us. In the way that the previous one had been, the Bandwagon-esque record happened really quickly because we'd had the material for some time. But with Grand Prix, I think we really wanted to get back to having, you know, going into the studio knowing exactly what we wanted to achieve. So in that sense, it felt really good in that it was a very concise session. I think, you know, we've been very fortunate that, you know, across the years we've been lucky to have pretty decent reviews generally. But maybe with the 13 record there were some not so great ones, maybe deservedly so, who knows. But we just felt that we felt as if we had something to prove or something, if not to other people, at least ourselves.
Yeah, if they had their way, they just want you to keep recording Bandwagon-esque until infinity, right? So you got to keep trying new things, throwing new things into the sound, right?
Well, absolutely, yeah. And you know, we've always been song-based. So there's only so much you can do. We were never going to do anything dramatically different stylistically. But yeah, we did, you know, that's maybe a move towards a more acoustic sound with the Grand Prix album and with the one that followed that, Songs from Northern Britain. We picked up some nice acoustic guitars and we'd found a mandola, and there are maybe certain more keyboards and things on it. And so, yeah, there's definitely a broader range of instruments on that record. I think with Grand Prix, it's pretty much, you know, electric guitar. There's some strings on there, but it's mostly electric guitar.
Sure, and as I said, it kind of felt like you guys, like, discovered the Byrds, kind of like a California sound. I mean, you guys had always been into Big Star and that kind of thing, but this kind of had more of a Laurel Canyon, that kind of, like, Mamas and the Papas at some point. Or
sure, yeah. Well, I mean, if it was unintentional, I think, I mean, that's not to say that we don't like that music, but I don't think we set out with a specific aim to make music like that. But, yeah, like I say, that's music that we are all fans of. But we probably listened to quite a lot of soul music at that time as well. I mean, I think we always have, but that's the thing you have, as I'm sure it is with any other band. You have a number of different influences that you put into, whatever when you're writing. Spit it out, Norman.
With Bandwagon-esque, you guys have always. I mean, the C86 scene was obviously a very communal scene. But when Bandwagon-esque came out, you were in the midst of the whole grunge movement, and you didn't really fit in there. And then in 95, you were in the midst of the height of Britpop, and you didn't really fit in there. So it was kind of like you guys always did your own thing. Were you ever, like, pressured by the label? Hey, it's 1995, Blur and Oasis are on the top of the charts. Can you make a song like Country House, or could you bring up the Kinks influence a little more?
Right, well, actually, funny you should talk about before we recorded Bandwagon-esque, in fact, while we were recording Bandwagon-esque, we made that record with Don Fleming, and we'd been working with Don for a few months before that. And it was actually, so we at that point we were listening to a lot of Sonic Youth and, you know, whatever. The initial idea was to have quite an aggressive record. But Don said, look, you guys are really good at harmonies and no one's really doing that at the moment. You should really focus on that because, you know, it would maybe make the record stand out a little more from other things that are around at the moment. And so that was really what influenced us, to make that record, harmony based or have more harmonies there. Now, and again, when it came to the Grand Prix thing, we never really felt part of that because, of course, a lot of these genres are created by the British music press. They've been doing it for years. I think they still do it. But we were in Glasgow. We didn't, and the Britpop thing was really a London-centric thing. Even though, Oasis were kind of the vanguard of that, and they were from Manchester, they lived in London. So it was all around the London media. So, in fact, our album after Grand Prix is a little ironic. The title, Songs from Northern Britain, was a little joke on the idea of, no one would call Scotland Northern Britain. You know, it was just a little kind of swipe at the Britpop thing. But I don't think we've ever really felt part of any particular scene. We really have always kind of just done our own thing.
That's awesome. And, Teenage Fan Club is known for having the three principal songwriters. I can think of the Beatles being another one. Can you fill us in on some other bands that have three principal songwriters?
Well, I suppose we were talking about the Byrds earlier on. They had a few songwriters, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, Gene Clark and Crosby and McGuinn or whatever, you know. Let me think, other than that, yeah, I suppose there must be loads. Must be loads of them.
There's got to be, but yeah, I mean, I've been studying up on it. I don't see that many, especially those that have been together for 25 years, you know, like that.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, I think groups are always about the dynamic of between the people who are in the group. Obviously, that's, and for some reason, our dynamic and the thing that works for us is to have three songwriters That's what, you know, everyone's comfortable with that. It's just the way we do our thing. And, you know, and it's a good fit for us, and for other bands it wouldn't be. For other people, you know, you'll have a kind of benevolent dictatorship. You'll have an artist who does all the writing, and that's, we've always felt that having three songwriters has made our life a little bit easier. And that, you know, if you think, if you're a sole songwriter for a band, and you've been around for 20 years and you've made 10 albums, that's a lot of work, you know, and that's, it's difficult to have a good level of consistency for any songwriter, you know. I wouldn't envy anyone who has to do that. So we always felt that we've been quite lucky in that we've had three of us, and we can sort of spread the load a little bit.
I love it. Like, doing my show, I've seen all these bands with quotation marks, and you find out, hey, James Dean Bradfield is really the mastermind behind all the Manic Street Preachers music, pretty much like that.
Right, yeah.
And Smashing Pumpkins, obviously another thing like that. And there's a lot of bands that are like that, where the one guy is really doing most of the work, the heavy lifting, and it's so refreshing to see that you guys been around so long, you know, carrying the weight together. And has there ever been, I mean, I'm sure there's been friction between you guys. Hey, I want my song on this one. I want that song, you know. But it's never really led to any, like, serious infighting, right?
No, you know, there really hasn't been very much friction at all. I don't think any of us are like that. It's not, you know, some people thrive on confrontation and for the creativity. I suppose people always talk about Jagger and Richardson, you know, that doesn't work for us. Again, it's about the dynamic of the individuals and how their personalities work together. And for us, so none of us are like that. We wouldn't be like that, you know. In fact, now for our albums, we'll write four songs each and we'll have 12 songs on the album. And that's just how we do it, because it's, you know, that's fine. And everyone so far has been able and managed to come up with the required amount of songs. So it's, but it looks like that's how it works for us. And with other situations, other bands, it would be different probably.
Yeah, it's a really different style, and it's really, you know, honorable and cool to see you guys doing it that way, having four songs on each album. That way you get 12. And so that's something that started even in the beginning with you guys. Way back in 89, you guys we said, hey, we're all songwriters. Let's do it all together, right?
You kind of, yeah. I think the first record, because myself and Raymond had sort of formed the band from the ashes of a previous band that we were in, so we had a few songs for the first album. But yeah, by the time we got to the second album, Jerry was writing at that point too, so it didn't take long for us to establish the, you know, the modus operandi.
Yeah, it's a really cool way of going about it. And yeah, you've had some famous fans over the years, your Kurt Cobains, your Liam Gallagher's. Did you ever meet Cobain or Liam, or...?
Yeah, we toured with Nirvana, which was an amazing experience. We'd sort of known those guys before, but we were the opening band on the Nevermind European tour, so we knew them pretty well for a brief period of time. We were good friends. In fact, funnily enough, in May, we're doing a show with Foo Fighters. Dave Grohl's asked us to come and play a festival show with them in Manchester, so we're doing that.
Awesome.
So I've not seen him for a few years. But yeah, that was an amazing thing to experience, the sort of phenomenon that was Nevermind. And, just to watch that happen to a band who, when we knew them, we probably met them around the time of the Bleach record. And, you know, they were playing fairly small venues at that point. And so to watch something go from that to this, phenomenon, it was amazing to witness. And, you know, they were really nice guys, and Kurt was a really nice guy, and, you know, it's just tragic what happened to him, really, you know. I have very fond memories of that period.
That's so awesome. And you guys are label mates too, right, Geffen? How was it like working with Geffen Company for so long? You guys were with them for quite a bit, right?
Quite a few years, yeah. We still have some friends. There's a guy, Mark Cates, who worked in A&R at Geffen, who's still a good friend of mine. He moved back to, but he's originally from Boston, big Red Sox fan, and we worked with him in Los Angeles at that time, and we're still good friends with him, and a few people from there we've still we see from time to time. So it's we met for a big label there, there were some nice and good people working there.
Yeah, it's such a crazy change of events from the mid-90s even till 2015. I mean, if your record label wasn't behind you 100%, then they'd kind of put you on the back burner, and that was kind of like a death knell for a lot of these bands. They'd get you for one album, and then the second album, they're not into it. Good luck with finding another record label. Now in 2015, I believe you guys are still with Merge, right?
We are, and that's been great. Here's the thing too. We've known sort of Superchunk for many years. In fact, I think our first or second show in the US, we played at CBGB's, and it was we were on Matador at the time, and it was a Matador bill, and Superchunk were on that bill. As Superchunk, Dust Devil, Railroad Jerk. And I think our Overkill were on the bill too. But we've known them since way back then, and they're great to work with. They're a fantastic label. All the people who work at that label are great, and we've just all our experiences with them have been really positive. In fact, we played down at the 25th anniversary festival just a few months back. They had in Chapel Hill, they had a 25th anniversary sort of, event over a weekend, and it was great fun.
Yeah, they're a perfect success story of what to do right in the music business. And, obviously been around for 30 years, Mac, yep. Superchunk and all those. And then they win the Album of the Year in the Grammys for the Arcade Fire album, the first independent released album to get the Album of the Year. Not that the Grammys really matter that much, but it's just kind of like a badge of honor. Hey, it works.
It really is. And I suppose, they're an artist-centric label because they were in a band, and they are in a band. Yeah. So they know how art think, and they've got they're very respectful of artists, and they also their deals are really good. They're aware that how often artists have been ripped off by labels, and of course they never do that. The quality of the product is good. The vinyl is always good. So they don't skimp on making a good product and promoting the records. So we've had a great time, and of course our next record will be on Merge also.
Love it. And thanks for taking the time out. I've just got maybe one or two more questions.
Sure thing.
How about your favorite city and or venue to play in America?
Oh God, that's a tough one. I don't know. Favorite city. I don't really know, to be honest with you. I think there's so many good places, so many different kind of places. That's the thing about the U.S. You can be in the same country, but places can feel very different, whether that be climate or whatever. So,
From the south till like Maine or somewhere else, like the Pacific Northwest, it feels like different countries, pretty much.
It really does. And a lot of these shows that I've done with the fan club have been great. But actually, I did a very small tour myself and Joe Pernice last year, and we did a little sort of tour of New England, and that was really enjoyable because I got to places, Portsmouth, for example, that I would never get to or never have. But yeah, and that was really good, to sort of do that. So, I'm trying to think of places that. Lots of great places. Sorry, it's a real cop out of an answer there, but I can't really. I'm trying to think of anything.
Get on my good side and say Chicago.
Well, the Metro, good shows at the Metro in the past, they were always, and of course we do, I think because we recorded in Chicago, we spent some time there, so we do feel a bit of an affinity with the city, but It's just because we sort of know our way around it a little more than other places, I suppose.
I love it. I'd love to visit Glasgow. I've heard great things about that. And speaking of Dave Grohl and company, they did that whole Sonic Highways thing on HBO, which was a great tour documentary thing, going and recording in a different city in a different studio every episode. And I just got word that they got greenlit for the next season, which will be in Great Britain. And I think Glasgow should definitely be a stop for Dave Grohl and the boys.
So. Yeah, I've got a feeling they'll do one there. But I'd heard that also, that they were going to do the UK. So that'll be great. And I'm sure they will stop in Glasgow. I mean, they have some connections, obviously Dave does, but, Eugene Kelly from the Vaseline's, and they were obviously important in the Nirvana story. So I there's no doubt in my mind that they'll get there at some point.
How about like Bobby Gillespie and Primal Scream? Were those guys close to you, or was that just people from the same city as you?
No, Bobby's a good friend of mine. I haven't seen him for a while, but the Primal Scream guys all moved to London, probably 20 years ago or something. But no, they were a big part of the Glasgow scene. Bobby had a club called Splash One, named after the 13th floor elevator song.
Oh, nice.
Which a lot of people went to, and it was very, and a lot of people in the Glasgow scene would hang around that club, from the members of the Pastels, and the Jesus and Mary Chain. All of these people would be kind of, and Alan McGee, of course, was involved there too. So, yeah, they're very important in the formative years of the what is now the sort of Glasgow independent music scene.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty close-knit scene. And, one more question from another one of those Halcyon 1991 albums, like your Screamadelicas, like your Neverminds, like your Bandwagon-esque. What is the backstory behind Alcoholiday, one of my favorites?
Oh, right. I mean, there isn't really much of a backstory, to be honest with you, other than that it's an awful pun. But that was just one of the songs that we had. We'd been sort of, I think that maybe had a song that I'd written for the previous band that I was in, the band called The Boy Hairdressers, but it had never been quite finished.
The aftermath of a terrible breakup, but maybe that it was a couple years before the recording of the album.
It kind of was, and it's lost in the mists of time. the story, because I don't think it's even about a specific relationship. It's about a number of different relationships over the course of my an adolescent of. Teenager,
sure.
kind of a number of relationships. So
every teenager, pretty much.
Exactly. There's an amalgamation of a number of different tragic events in my life.
I got you. Nice. That's an awesome note to end on. You got the new album coming out this fall. Check out more info at teenagefanclub.com. Follow on Twitter. It's Norman Blake or Teenage Fan Club at Twitter. And, just want to thank you so much. You're a big influence on my life. The music stands the test of time like nothing else. Thanks so much. Any last words, Norman?
It's just been nice chatting with you, Andy, and I appreciate you giving me the thing.
Awesome. Sounds so good. And on behalf of Norman Blake, this is Andy signing off for the Andy Derer Show. This episode of the Andy Dare Show is brought to you in part by Uncle Bub's award-winning barbecue in Westmont, Illinois. Family-owned and operated since 1997, Uncle Bub's is the real deal barbecue. A family-friendly restaurant open 7 days a week. Also, it's a full-service catering company doing weddings, pig roasts, luaus, grill packages, you name it. They have a friendly, helpful staff that will make sure that your party goes off without a hitch. Call them at 630-493-9000. Visit them at 132 South Cass Avenue in Westmount, Illinois, and UncleBubs.com. Hey man, I know you like grilling. I know you like getting those dark grill marks on your burgers, fish, chicken. And I know you don't want to just dry your meat out like you're cooking with a hairdryer. Why not get the Man Grate and click through the AndyDareShow.com's banner so we can keep the lights on here at Honeycomb Hideout Studios in gorgeous Westmont, Illinois. The Man Grate. This episode of the Andy Dare Show is brought to you in part by Record Utopia, a music lover's dream with thousands of vinyl records, musical instruments, and sound gear. They buy, sell, and trade. give them a call at 630-963-1957. Visit them in Westmont, Illinois at 309 West Ogden Avenue, on the web at recordutopia.com. It's always a good, relaxed atmosphere. Check them out, Record Utopia. Be sure to follow Andy on Twitter, that's at Andy Darer, and like our show on Facebook, that's facebook.com/TheAndyDarerShow. Videos at youtube.com/AndrewMartinDarer, and we're on iTunes, just search The Andy Darer Show, please leave a review. Thanks so much to our wonderful sponsors, Uncle Bub's award-winning barbecue, Record Utopia, The Bandrate, and Amazon.com. Theme song courtesy of Rich Banks Music. Thank you so much for checking out The Andy Darer Show. TheAndyDarerShow.com.